And Ahasuerus, based on the counsel of his most trusted advisors, recommends that we get rid of Vashti. The Megillah itself doesn't tell us exactly what happened to her, but you know, we use our imagination. And after this, the second chapter opens up by telling us that some time went by and Ahasuerus had calmed down, had sobered up, and he remembered Vashti, remember what he did to Vashti, and was saddened over what he had done. And you know, I don't think this will be so much of a spoiler. I think we're familiar with at least this part of the story, is then Ahasuerus goes for a search for a new queen, and then Esther becomes the queen. And one of the directives that Mordechai gives Esther is that she should not reveal her identity. So I want to take a look at some of these dynamics that are at play here. What exactly was the nature of the search for the new queen? You know, what did Esther get herself into, or what was she forced into? What was Esther's behavior in the royal palace? How did she maintain her observance? And also ask the question, was it a good idea that Mordechai advised Esther not to reveal her identity? And also take a look at where the chapter leaves off with Bigthan and Teresh. The two people are plotting against Ahasuerus, and Mordechai is overhearing it and him telling Esther to report it to the king. So the chapter opens up that after the events that happened with Vashti and what was decreed against her, so he was appeased and he remembered Vashti. So what does it mean that he remembered Vashti? Sounds like he regretted what he had done. He thought, you know, maybe this, you know, wasn't the best idea. And right, he'd remember that the Medrash says in number two, remember that he decreed for her to enter naked before him. And when she didn't enter, he became angry. And Ahasuerus realized that's why he was so distressed over it. It says that Vashti acted correctly. I mean, you don't need such a, you know, morally upstanding person to realize that, you know, it's hard to argue with her decision. You know, granted, she wasn't the most pious woman in general, but you know, Ahasuerus, when he came to his senses, so he regretted it. He'd remembered what he did and the events that transpired, and realized that she was right. And what was decreed against her? And the Medrash points out, and this, it gives us a background to Vashti's character that we don't find in the Megillah itself. And the Medrash gives a background of who Vashti was and why she was, based on her previous deeds, was deserving of this punishment. And the Medrash says that what was Nigzar Aleha, what was decreed against her? And it was decreed against her unjustly, that the decree was unjustly. So why did this decree befall her? So here we see that the Medrash is emphasizing that, you know, already all of these events, while the Megillah itself doesn't mention Hashem, and it's not, it seems like a, you know, series of perhaps, you know, unrelated and in some ways even bizarre events, but we see that, you know, Hashem was pulling the strings directly. And that true, even though the Ahasuerus's decree was unjust, but the decree of the true king of Hashem was just. And this points out something we didn't see last week, is that Vashti wouldn't allow Ahasuerus to grant permission to build the Beis HaMikdash, because Ahasuerus's predecessor, Koresh, Cyrus, that he had given permission, and then the project was halted. And Vashti didn't allow Achashverosh to give his permission for the Jews to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So because of that, because she was holding back the redemption, she was worthy of this decree against her. But this is what Achashverosh did. He after some time, he calmed down, he sobered up, and he realized what he had done was improper, or was immoral, was wrong. So, as we noted last time, and because we can test it out to see if it's the case, Achashverosh never makes a decision by himself. So if you look back at number one in Pasuk Beis, verse number two, by Yomer Nare HaMelech, Mishar Sub, so the king's servants who ministered to him, said, actually, Melech Naros Besulos Tobos Mara. Say, we have an idea. Let there be sought out young, virgin, beautiful, beautiful girls. And the king should set up, so should in all of the provinces should be have them gathered together, brought to the house, brought to Shushan, and put in the care of the sarisim, of the eunuchs. You know, we'll have this whole idea. We'll go and we'll, you know, gather. We'll gather the young unmarried women. We'll bring them to the palace. And Vanara shared Atita Be'enei HaMelech, that the young woman who finds favor in the eyes of the king, Timloch Tachas Vashti, she'll rule in place of Vashti. Vayitav Hadavar Be'enei HaMelech Yaskein. And that idea seemed good in the eyes of the king, and he went along with this plan. Right? What do? Achashverosh doesn't have a wife, so we go search for a new one. And I think when we learn this story as kids, we think of it as, oh, there's this, you know, beauty pageant, and everyone tried out for it. You know, not exactly what. Wasn't exactly the reality. And I think it's important to note because it gives some context to the type of real sacrifice, both during the events of the Megillah and, God willing, we'll get to the events after the Megillah, what happened afterwards, the real sacrifice that Esther made in order to facilitate the salvation of her people. So what was this plan? So you could read it on the surface that, you know, gather the women. But the Malbim and others point out that it was biyad hazaka. It was by force. They went into all of the areas and they, you know, went house to house and they took the women by force. Now you can ask the question, maybe not Esther, but wouldn't you think that all of the young women would be, you know, competing and very, very eager to become queen? Why did he have to send his officers to take them by force? Exactly. So if you look at number three, that's what the Malbim said, is he addressed the point that, why do they need to take them by force? And he says, because why did he need to make this decree? Because he said, first, the mob says, first he, you know, sent out a, you know, advertisement. They requested that they come, but then they heard what happened to, they knew what happened to Vashti. So, you know, they didn't want to be next. So then it says they gather them together by force. And that says both the in different classes and so that was the gathering them up. That was the taking them by force. And then it says that they'll be taken to the Beis HaNashim, the house of the women, and they'll be given cosmetics. And Malbim says, why was that included as part of the decree? And he says that the women will only be given jewelry, or not jewelry, cosmetics, by the sarisim, by the eunuchs that worked in the palace. Why? Because Vashti had her own makeup, and she says, I don't want your makeup. I don't want you to, you know, help me get dressed up or prepare myself. So she had some power, but Achashverosh, or his advisors, suggested they make the system where they would be taken by force. They'd be taken to this harem, and they would only be provided with the cosmetics and everything they need by the eunuchs, so that really they would be powerless. I mean, it was really a very abusive way of doing things. You know, it really wasn't a beauty pageant, but it shows, you know, already, and we mentioned this last week, that, you know, Achashverosh was really very, in many ways, very weak, you know, despite the fact that he, you know, ruled all of these provinces and had military successes. It seemed to have been known that, you know, you didn't really want to get too close to him. And even the nobility, even the people who, you know, otherwise who would have wanted to become closer to the king, you know, didn't want this. So he really devised this scheme, or his advisors suggested this, to, you know, take the women by force and to, you know, make them very vulnerable so that they wouldn't stand up for themselves in the way that Vashti did. So just to give you some context to what was going on.
Was there any mention of, like, the families of the women who were taken by force? Like, how did it not provoke a kind of uprising?
I guess what could you do? But it seems to be, and we'll get to this when we see what did Mordechai and Esther, did she try to avoid it? Did she perhaps try to become selected? It seems to be that it maybe wasn't so, wasn't so clear that no one wanted it, but at least why they had to do it in this manner, that at least there was some hesitation. And Achashverosh, you know, wanted to, you know, he wouldn't have been satisfied with only those who were eager. So that's the background to what was going on, just to understand again what kind of situation Esther was in. She's really, you know, she's the heroine of the story, but she's also the victim of the story. And now we get to Mordechai and Esther. Seems to be the kind of an interlude. We're told about this, and then we hear about Ish Yehudi B'Shushan Abira. There was a Jewish man in Shushan, the capital, Shmo Mordechai, and his name was Mordechai. He was from the tribe of Binyamin, and he was exiled from Yerushalayim with Yechonyahu, Melech Yehuda, at the time that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, exile the people, which we discussed a little bit about the dating last time, is it makes both of them quite old. There's a medrash that says that Esther, well, how old do you think Esther was? Yeah. So there's a medrash that says that Esther was 75, which makes sense based on what this pasuk says about Mordechai. It says Mordechai was one of those who went into exile when Nebuchadnezzar exiled the Jewish people. There are some interpretations that maybe it was, and he was a descendant of that, but according to the basic reading of the pasuk, sounds like he was one of the people who left Eretz Yisrael when Nebuchadnezzar exiled the Jewish people, and that's what he was doing in Persia. So now we're already, if we say the 70 years, so now we're approaching the 70 years, and truly he doesn't sound like he was an infant then. So I don't know what the age difference was between Mordechai and Esther, but that could at least explain why it would make sense that Esther was 75. But just interesting point that emerges from this description of Mordechai. But here's what we do know about about Mordechai is the Ben Ezra says, and the Midrashim, the Gemara all support this, that Mordechai was an important person. He was an important person both in the Jewish community, and he was even a person of rank in the kingdom. And that's what he was doing by the palace gate. You know, not just anyone could hang out there. But Mordechai was a member of the Sanhedrin, and in the efforts to return to Yerushalayim, so he was, Ibn Ezra says that he was one of those who returned with Zerubbabel, and was one of the leaders of the people who were involved in the efforts to return to Yerushalayim and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So both within the Jewish people, and it's pretty evident in Shushan in Persia, he was also someone of distinction, which the Malbim says is Malbim has a long explanation where he breaks down every piece of this. He says Ish Yehudi, Yayib Shushan Habira, that all of these different aspects of Mordechai were an explanation of why he wasn't able to avoid the capturing of Esther, because he was a prominent person. He lived in the capital. He wasn't someone who, they would just overlook. So that was Mordechai. And then it says about Esther, Vayihi omen es Hadassah hi Esther. So he raised Hadassah, who it says he Esther. So Hadassah, he raised Hadassah, who is Esther. So let's see, what was her real name? Bas Dodo, his uncle's daughter, Ein lo ava aim, that she didn't have a father or mother, and she's very beautiful. And Lekacha Mordechai lo levas, and he took her as a daughter. So what exactly was Esther's history and the relationship between Mordechai and Esther? So what was her name? Was it Hadassah or was it Esther? Some people have the name Hadassah Esther, so it works out, but. So which was the name, Hadassah or Esther? So the Gemara quotes different opinions on this. So Rabbi Yehuda said, why was she called Hadassah? So it says that she was righteous among myrtles. That she was of outstanding righteousness. And that was what earned her name of Hadassah, or at least the fact that people called her Hadassah. Rabbi Yehuda says that that Hadassah was her real name, but she had the nickname of Esther because she was Masteres Debareha, that she hid or concealed the truth about herself. So really, Hadassah was her real name, but she was known as Esther because of this, and that's the Torah says there's an allusion to Esther, and well, the pasuk in Esther Magedes as Amma, because she didn't make known her family or her people. So, and then. Then that seems to be the understanding. Ruchemi also says that Hadassah was a real name. Why we should call it Esther? So it's like sometimes you have your Hebrew name and the name on your driver's license. So it says her name was Hadassah, but her Persian name was Ishtar. And that was what the Persians called her. But at home, they called her Hadassah. So her name is Esther, Hadassah. I think she's become known as Esther, but it could be that Hadassah was her real name, and she was given Esther either as reference to the fact that she kept her identity hidden, or that was just her, her goyish name. And what was her family background? So when it says ki ein la'ava aim, that she didn't have a father or mother, so the Gemara Megillah number 7 says. That her mother and father were dead. So it says that her mother, when her mother became pregnant, her father died, and her mother died in childbirth, which which tells us that Mordechai really was responsible for her from the beginning. But what was the relationship between Mordechai and Esther? Right. Anything else? So the Gemara does say, and I think this seems to be assumed from other discussions about how Esther could go to Ahasuerus, is that they were married. And when it said that he took her levas, so it's, the Gemara says in number seven, I'll take re levas, don't read it as levas, ella levayas. I'd rather read it as for a home. And the term of bias connotes being married. It brings other context where bias refers to a married home. And it says so too, Mordechai Hafinami Levayas. So here too, Mordechai, that they were married. And it is permissible, according to the strict halacha, for an uncle and a niece to be married. Not permitted in the other direction. But so that was, Chazal assumed that was their relationship. And
uncle and niece or the first cousin?
Her uncle's
daughter. His uncle's daughter.
Right, so maybe first cousins. But either way, according to halacha, it is permissible.
Even if you brought them up as a child, like, it's different.
But it doesn't. It doesn't transform it into a forbidden relationship. So, this is important because when it comes to Esther being taken by Ahasuerus or then taking the initiative to go to Ahasuerus, this presents a real problem if she was married. The problem of how was she allowed to do that if adultery is something that one would have to give their life up rather than transgress. So that's a question we can address later, but this is it's not just a trivia or a fun fact. This is really an important question about how Esther could do what she did and the nature of what she did.
He would have had to give her that. No, you sent her off, you'd have to give her that. No. Would have been that, right?
That would have solved it.
Yeah. And if Mordechai was if it was for this process, I'd imagine.
Right. So just in short, at least one aspect of it is, at least until a certain point, and I think this would answer the question of why he didn't give a get. At least at a certain point, if that the psukim allude to it, and the Gemara said explicitly that Esther was taken by force, and every time they were together, Esther was. She was raped by him. She was taken by force. And if a married woman is raped, so then she's not forbidden to her husband. Normally, if there's a consensual extramarital affair, so then woman becomes forbidden both to her husband and to the person with whom she had the affair. If she is God forbid, taken by force, so then they would not be forbidden. So it could be that Mordechai and Esther wanted to maintain their marriage. We could discuss a little more about that later, but that just explains what their relationship was. And also just tells us to have an appreciation of how difficult this whole situation was.
So if they were married, you don't know anything about children or descendants from Esther and Mordechai?
I'm not aware of anything about that, but it's an interesting point. It would seem that, especially if they were so old at a certain point. Also, it's the Medrash that says that Esther was 75 is a little bit difficult to reconcile with the understanding that Daryavesh II, Darius II, was Esther's son. I mean, unless something happened, but It is just one perspective. So, and we did the Miguel doesn't tell how old they are, but just if we're putting the pieces together, just to see, you know, what the timeline was, what the description of Mordechai is, and how old Esther was. But, you know, now to just analyze the story itself. So, and I think as, you know, as we're younger, we think it's a beauty pageant, and Esther was this mysterious Jewish girl who Ahasuerus didn't. He didn't know about her, her nationality. But let's see what was this all about. The pasuk says in number 10, Lo yida Esther esamav es maladta, that Esther didn't reveal her nationality or lineage. Ki Mordechai tziva aleha asher lo sagid, that Mordechai commanded her not to to reveal any of this. So. Why do you think Mordechai didn't want Esther to reveal this information?
It's dangerous for her. If she was like in the harem, and then, but her husband or uncle was like one of the most important people in Jerusalem. And already a political kind of place. Keep your head down.
Right.
Get out.
So there are basically two approaches to this. Is it's either that she hid her lineage, and actually her lineage is more than just the fact that she's Jewish and related to Mordechai. She comes from the tribe of Binyamin, and she's a descendant of Shaul HaMelech, of King Saul. So she comes from distinguished lineage, you know, and Mordechai is a distinguished person. So they're basically two approaches to this. Either her not revealing her origins was to try when going into the competition, or not competition, when she was being taken as a prospective queen. So at that point, she didn't tell anyone. Then it seems evident she didn't tell anyone afterwards either. But at that point, she didn't tell anyone. So could be she didn't, that Mordechai commanded her not to tell anyone, either because if she revealed her identity, it would give her a greater chance of being chosen.
Oh, because she'd be like Vashti, she'd be bringing like legitimacy.
Right. So either the revealing her identity would give her a greater chance of being chosen, or it would give her a lesser chance of being chosen. And the question is, what were Mordechai and Esther going for? Did she or they want her to be picked or not? So I think the, you know, more common explanation, and I think it fits with the text and it fits with just the context that we set up, is that she was trying to avoid being taken, and she was taken by force. Well, see, there are actually some commentaries who say that understanding what was going on then and what the potential of this arrangement could be, that they maybe were trying to at least not avoid it. So the psukim themselves in the Megillah don't tell us exactly, you know, what their goals were, but we see that she didn't tell she didn't reveal any nationality to anyone. And in Pasuk 15, in source number 11, it says that when Esther's turn came, so she didn't request anything other than what Haggai, the eunuch of the king, the guardian of the women, would give her. That sounds like the other women, maybe at this point, were eager to become queen. I guess they were already taken from their homes. So they would, you know, ask for extra stuff, but Esther, she didn't ask for anything. She just Haggai did whatever he did to beautify her, but she didn't ask for anything. So what does this suggest about whether Esther wanted to be queen or didn't want to be queen? Right, you could say that it sounds like she didn't want to be queen. She wasn't interested in competing. So take a look at both of these perspectives, either that Esther was trying to avoid it, or maybe that she wasn't, and you know, if that was justified. And I think we can reconcile these two approaches, and you'll see why. So Rashi says that Esther didn't reveal her origins in order that they will say that she was from a mishpacha bezuya, that she was from a degraded family, and they would send her away. I don't know who you are. You're not telling us who your family is. You're probably you're nobody. You're probably of a low class. But if they knew that she was from the family of Shaul HaMelech, then they would keep her. So Mordechai said, you know, that don't tell them that you're from our distinguished family, because again, they want that validation, or that will be in your favor as far as being chosen. Ibn Ezra quotes a few explanations, and the first explanation he quotes, and he doesn't seem to accept it, is that Mordechai, he said, there are some who say, in number 13, that Mordechai didn't act correctly in his ordering Esther not to identify her nation. And because he feared that the king wouldn't take her as a wife if he knew that she was from the exile. So there are, with Esther's identity, it's a more complicated identity, because on one hand, she's from a distinguished family among the Jewish people. On the other hand, the fact that she's from the Jewish people is, a more low status, because these were people who were still in exile. So the Ibn Ezra focuses on more, I think, on why she didn't reveal that she was a Jew. Okay, Rashi says she didn't reveal that she's from King Shaul because she didn't want the prestige.
Ibn Ezra said beforehand that, you know, Mordechai was at the gate of the king because he was so prominent, and he was part of the Sanhedrin, and he lived in Shushan, he's an important person. So how would they not know who Esther was if she was either his wife or a relation to him?
I don't know, mayor, governor, spouse. You know. Someone could be a prominent person, you never met their spouse.
Didn't we mention that that's why also Esther was sought out, because he was...
Well, that was at least a possibility. I mean, meaning they couldn't, right, he couldn't hide it. Right, the Malbim says that they couldn't hide it because he was, maybe was just, right, that's interesting. If they were taken from the houses, how did she not? I don't know, maybe there were different people who, there were the people who went and took the women from their homes, and then there were the, when they got to the Beis HaNashim, you know, the women's house, I don't know, maybe they didn't have records. I don't know, but it's a good point, is how is this really not known? Good point, but it seems to not have been known.
I mean, the difficulty is more with the Gemara, I think, because if you just took care of her and they weren't married, then it's possible that she was not known. That's a spouse.
Maybe. I don't know. I think either way, but the fact that they took from the house is that, I guess they didn't keep a record. I mean, the Megillah itself says that she didn't reveal and that their identity wasn't known. So apparently it wasn't known. Maybe they didn't keep records of it. They just took, you know, anyone they could. So Ibn Ezra quotes this opinion. He says that some say this. It sounds like from the fact that it says that Mordechai feared that Achashverosh wouldn't take him, it sounds like they were trying to have Esther become the queen. And the Rashbam is critical of this. He said, what did he accomplish by this? Because maybe had Esther's nationality been known, it's possible that Haman would never have issued his edict. Because you see at the end that when Esther says that there's a decree against my people, so Achashverosh, you know, flips out. So Duresh Bam suggests that maybe had they had he known it right away, it would have been better. Others say that he was so infatuated with Esther that as time went on, he was angered by someone wanting to harm Esther's people. But maybe at this point, he wouldn't have been so protective. But the Ibn Ezra said that there are some say that Mordechai acted incorrectly, and then think the Rashbam implies that. But the Ibn Ezra says that, no, even though the reason that Mordechai told Esther not to reveal her identity was because he didn't want to diminish her chances, it was because he knew prophetically that salvation would come for Israel through her. And also the Ibn Ezra says that if she revealed that she was Jewish, so then she would be a target, and they would try to coerce her to eat not kosher food and not to maintain her observance. But the fact that she didn't tell that she was Jewish and was able to, you know, do things more quietly, and it says that she got vegetables and she was able to maintain standards of kashrus. So Mordechai told her not to reveal her identity, because then they wouldn't be suspicious if she you know, ordered the vegetarian meal. So again, Rashi says that the reason for not revealing the identity is because she wanted to diminish her chances, because her identity was prestigious. The Ibn Ezra maintains that she didn't reveal her identity because she didn't want to diminish her chances, but it was justified. You know, Mordechai's advice was correct, and Esther's actions were correct, because Mordechai had a prophecy that salvation would come for the Jewish people through her. So he realized that it was part of a divine plan. And I think Rashi, based on a Medrash, even though he says that beforehand they were trying to avoid Esther being taken, once she was already selected, so it says that Mordechai would walk in front of the Beis Hanashim, the court of the women, and would, in order to know, Ladas Eshlom Esther Umay Yaseba, to know about her welfare and what would be done with her. And then Rashi there says, in number 17, that is the only reason why a tzaddikus like Esther was taken was because Chasid Lakam Loshia Yisrael, that she's destined to arise and save Israel. So Mordechai would go and see if there was any progress in that area. So it sounds like, according to many of the prominent commentaries, that at the point that Esther was taken, it was recognized really through you know, divine inspiration, even prophecy, that this was not, you know, an accident. This was something that would be essential for the Jewish people. And the Gemara says, well, what did she eat when she was in the palace? So she would eat seeds, she would eat vegetables, and she was able to arrange that. And the Rama actually brings a custom to some people eat seeds on Purim. Wasn't aware of the people who follow this custom, but the Rama in the Shulchan Aruch says that there are those who eat seeds on Purim to as a remembrance of this. So that was whether, one, what was Esther trying to accomplish by hiding her identity? Either she was trying to lower her chances or raise her chances. And the question of was this correct or not? So the Rashbam implies this was not correct. The Ibn Ezra quotes some who say that it was not correct, but to the Ibn Ezra says in the final analysis, and I think others assume this way, is that it was only done because, even if we say that she was trying to increase her chances, it was only done because Mordechai knew through prophecy that this was for the purpose of saving the Jewish people. And the chapter ends with the conversation of Bigzan and Teresh, who were two Tarsiim, two guards from a foreign nation, who the Gemara and Midrashim say that they were speaking it, they were speaking it Tarsi, they're speaking this foreign language. They were just saying, oh, let's, you know, kill the king, because it says that they, and they assumed that nobody understood them, because you wouldn't usually, you know, stand outside in a, standing outside Buckingham Palace. You're not standing outside the palace, you know, just talking about it, but they thought that nobody understood them. So, and then it says that it became known to Mordechai, and Mordechai told this to Queen Esther to tell the king in Mordechai's name. Again, it at least suggests that maybe there was some connection, or the connection between Mordechai and Esther wasn't totally hidden. If Mordechai reported in Mordechai's name that he overheard Bigthan and Teresh plotting against him, and then it says that they were both hanged, and it was written in the Divrei Hayamim, in the chronicles of Achashverosh, that Mordechai had saved the life of the king. Just a note, a friend pointed this out to me. He's an excellent Bal Kore, and he knows that he's one of these diktuk people. He says there's no person named Seresh. Even if you pronounce with an Ashkenazi pronunciation, the Megillah says Bigthan v'Seresh, v'Seresh. But that's only because grammatically, when you have the Vav, then the Dagesh is taken away. But there's no person Seresh, it's Teresh, for any of the grammar people. So the question is, so what were Bigthan and Teresh, what were they upset about? Why were they plotting to kill the king? They were demoted, right.
What was their position?
So the Gemara and then the Midrashim say that they were they were basically given that they had Mordechai's job. The two of them had Mordechai's job, and they were demoted so that Mordechai was promoted to their position. And why was Mordechai promoted? So some of the Mepharshim explained that, and the Malbim says this in number 20, that when Esther was taken as queen, or as a wife for Achashverosh, so it was known, and that this, I think this addresses the question, that it was known apparently that she came from Mordechai's house. Maybe they didn't know. So I think the answer must be they didn't know what nation Mordechai was from. But how did they not? Right. It's,
maybe they didn't know there was a relationship, and they thought she was someone.
Well, the Malbim says that he was promoted because they found her in his house. Right. Maybe they thought she was a servant or something. Hey, that could be. It says that. Shematsu Osababeso. They found her in his house. So maybe they didn't. Yeah. Because that was, according to the Malbim, that was one of the reasons why Mordechai was promoted to this position, and why Bigthan and Teresh were angry. Because they were demoted. He said that the Medrash says in number 21, he said he relieved two and set one in their place. And he says, we're aristocrats, and he sets that in a barbarian there. So they
were demoted because they took Esther from Mordechai.
No, Mordechai got promoted
to their position of guarding the, I guess, of being a more distinguished guard or distinguished person in the and in the province.
Because they
took Esther, so they say, well, we found her in your house. We'll give you in a prestigious position, because that was the way things worked. So.
But they took so many women. Like, why?
But Esther was the one who...
When she became favored, he got...
Right, that's what it sounds like. Okay. But just like everything else in the Megillah, it seems like a, you know, random series of events and even switching of events. So you could say, okay, what's this whole thing? How did Mordechai, you know, just happen to be there at the right place at the right time? He was a member of the Sanhedrin who knew all the languages of the world. And the Medrash says that, you know, clearly something else was going on here. And the quotes the Medrash that in number 21, the second paragraph, that he incited Bigson and Teresh against Achashverosh in order to bestow greatness upon Mordechai. And he says, we see this in other parts of the Torah, in other places of Tanakh, that Yosef rose to greatness because Paro became angry with the servants. And that's why two of Paro's servants were in prison, and Yosef interpreted their dreams. And then the chamberlain tells Paro, you know, 2 years later that there's a person in prison who can interpret dreams. So Hashem was pulling the strings and made it so that Bigson and Teresh were angry with Achashverosh, and that Mordechai would hear, so that he would be written in the chronicles of the king, and that they would be set up for the salvation of the Jewish people. But yes, okay. But why was Mordechai and Esther? Why were they so concerned about what happened with Achashverosh? At the end of the day, Achashverosh wasn't a good person, and even if they knew that maybe something would happen, that Esther played a role there, but maybe it would be better if, you know, Achashverosh was just gone. So, right. So the Simcha Bunim of Ger says that they knew that Haman may have been next in line. And in a future week, we'll learn a little bit about Haman. But they knew that Haman was also a prominent person. If you think Achashverosh was bad, well, Haman is even worse. So they wanted to keep him around. And another explanation, and this is consistent with the Medrash, is that Mordechai knew that this was all part of a divine plan. The fact that he was there, the fact that he was in a position to save the life of the king, and for it to be known that he saved the life of the king, and, you know, with his just general understanding that Esther was there for a purpose, and the purpose of saving the Jewish people, Mordechai was sensitive and attuned to the fact that this was part of the plan. And that's why he took the efforts to save the life of Achashverosh. And we see in, I think in every stage of the Megillah, but it's not as apparent in the earlier stages, is that everything that happens is significant. And there's a lot of symbolism. You look at the Talmud Yerushalmi in verse 24, that there's a lot of mentions of Mordechai sitting at the Shar HaMelech, sitting at the king's gate. And you see, first he sat at the king's gate, and then he took the, and then when Achashverosh remembered him, so he was decorated and paraded around town. Then he was taken out in royal garb. Then like Yehudi Ma'isa Orv Simcha V'Sason. And there are these contrasts between him, I mean, at some points being at the king's gate and being in sackcloth and crying out, and being at the king's gate and paraded and given prestige as a sign that the Jewish people were saved and then defeated their enemies. So, you know, everything that happens was happening for a reason. Really, the party that Achashverosh threw, and Vashti being deposed, and did everything else, it was all part of this plan. And we see that Mordechai was aware of this. And even though it was very difficult, even though it was, you know, terrible that Esther was taken, that Esther would be in such conditions, and Mordechai and Esther, on their level, they realized the significance of what was going on and viewed it as part of a divine plan. And this shows us, especially when we see the Megillah, you know, in hindsight, we see that at every step of the way, it was all a setup for the salvation of the Jewish people. And even the events of the search for the queen and the makeup and the decorating and everything like that, it was all part of this plan. And God willing, in coming weeks, we'll see how the plan develops.
Oh.